sanctuary. We heard it said so beautifully by our children. It's one of those words that is so beautiful to say and to hear. It gives me faith in the auditory beauty and complexity of our language. Complex? How so? The word sanctuary comes from a Latin word meaning holy, a place like this set aside for holy worship. In modern times, it also came to mean a place of refuge or protection, as in a place that refugees or others at risk of criminal prosecution would be safe. Yet also woven into the mix is the German word for wholeness. So the complexity and nuance of the word sanctuary is that it is both a public reality, a space for common activities, and a personal route to wholeness or integration. I, at least, can't think of any other word in our language with such diverse and yet complementary meanings, overlapping our public sphere and our interior lives, bringing wholeness to both community and an individual, serving as a protective umbrella for communities to worship together. As many of you know, our somewhat unwieldy name, Unitarian Universalists, came out of a merger between two faiths back in the 1960s. Both Unitarians and Universalists were Christians back in the day, and both believed that people had the wisdom to interpret the Bible for themselves. The Universalists interpreted God as so loving he, yes, always he, wouldn't send anyone to hell. The Unitarians believed that there was one God, not a Trinity. Unitarians mostly thought Jesus had a special relationship with God, but Jesus was not divine. What they had in common was a search for truth, a deep search for faith truth of the type that lands on your heart and answers your deepest questions. They also had very similar ideas about social justice and how important working together for social change was in a religious community. They were both known as rebel faiths, sometimes even heretical faiths. And the Unitarians and Universalists were just fine with those labels. Individual Unitarians were often wealthy and almost always upper class. They honored education. They founded the Harvard School of Divinity. And they were great social activists, abolitionists, men and women supporting women getting the vote, and more. They have steadfastly helped our nation express many of its most positive values. Our Universalist ancestors were really loving. They spent most of their theological energy answering questions about love. They weren't much on formal education and made it a habit to call ministers, as this congregation will be calling a minister in a few short months, who were filled with spirit but didn't have a formal degree in theology or divinity. The Universalists were mostly rural people who did community really, really well. So what we see is that both sides of our religious ancestry have virtues, and both have virtues galore. And they were different, though they chose to merge. Unitarians mostly operated out of logic and intellect. They got where they were going theologically through their heads. Universalists operated out of community and a sense of love and connection. In my experience, much of the sense of sanctuary, in the sense of community, and a place where we can come and lick our wounds, and a place of safety from which to risk creativity, soul journey, and faith, comes from our Universalist past. And you can probably tell that that's the arm of our faith that I lean on most heavily. As the Soul Matter team says, today we return to the shelter of each other, to arms that hold us in the midst of the storms, to voices that remind us of our own, to hearts that accept us for who we are. May we be for each other a source of safety and sending. May we offer each other both comfort and challenge. May this place of peace lead us to share peace with others. Let us begin. I want to live in that world, where I am accepted for who I am, where I am a source of both safety and sending for others. Yes, give me universalist faith and that sense of sanctuary. And yet, Reverend Dr. Mark Morrison Reed is Unitarian Universalism's preeminent living historian. He's an unabashed universalist. When you're in a room with him, you know where he stands, and he stands on the side of love. He found the conviction that God loves us all too much to punish us to be his own deepest belief. However, much of his recent historiography focuses on the ways that Unitarians and Universalists failed at providing Black folk sanctuary. He points out that back in the late 1800s, Unitarians often operated in a progressive intellectual strata that included a handful of Black intellectuals such as author and abolitionist Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, and that also white Unitarians worked with W.E.B. Du Bois to found the NAACP. By contrast, his beloved Universalists, my beloved Universalists, found few venues where they would come in contact with Black intellectuals. Also, Universalists tended to be rural. Universalists were strongest in places where there were few African Americans in our heartland. Without that exposure and interaction, many Universalists seem to have embraced the pervasive American white supremacist attitudes about African Americans. Let us understand what this meant for minorities and their welcome in Unitarian Universalism in the early 1900s. And yes, this does bear on what I said earlier as a sorrow. In 1911, the Universalists sort of stumbled through a quirky path into running a school for Black students in Virginia. Where was it? Hampton Roads, someplace around there. The Black minister in charge of that endeavor, Joseph Fletcher Jordan, wanted to open a companion seminary at the school. A seminary, an institution of higher learning that would have focused on building Black Universalist ministers in the South. That was his stated mission. When he asked the Universalist Association for money for that project, he was given $6,000 over about 10 years. And when I first read that, I was like, wow, that's a long time ago. That's a lot of money. Money was worth more than that then. But somehow, the Universalists were able to fund $275,000 over the same time period to a mission in Japan that was not explicitly Universalists. It was a mission with tangential relevance to Universalism in the U.S. Wow. $6,000 to a domestic project for African Americans and the possibility of spreading Universalist faith to masses of Black people, but $275,000 to a project in Japan. I call this historic racism. I call this a reflection of an historic view of sanctuary that was about us, but is not about all of us. I say that historic racism needs to be understood so we can make different choices today. Let us move forward offering sanctuary to all the people. To people of all classes and racial backgrounds, to people with different religious histories and no religious history at all. Let us provide shelter to each other. Let us provide arms that hold all of us in the midst of the storms. Let us provide shelter to voices that remind us of our own and those with accents from far away. Let us be a place of peace where we share peace with all others. Let us begin. Because I started out by saying that this word, sanctuary, was a word about this place and something we do together, and it's also about this place and something that we do inside ourselves, something important that we create inside ourselves. And prayer is one of the ways that that can be done. Some of you are busy, really busy. Some of you are hurting, really hurting. You may need a pause, a moment to refresh your spirit, to heal, to restore your wholeness, to deepen your connection to Source. You may be thinking about life's big questions, one of which is surely about how to deepen your spiritual life, how to deepen practices that sustain and nurture your connection to that which you define as bigger than you are and unknown. For the humanists among us, that may mean nature, or in the words of my first UU minister, Reverend Bill Murray, appreciating the unimaginably vast and breathtakingly beautiful universe and finding joy and satisfaction in contributing to human betterment. For theists, maybe it is God or the divine you are seeking to connect with. Whether you call that thing Atman, guiding light, or essence of light, you know what I mean. I want to be clear that right now I am not talking about self-care. You may hear me talk about self-care some other time. I am a big believer in self-care. Practices that protect and heal your body are important. Yeah, sleep enough, take social media holidays, eat good foods, the right amount of exercise for you, indulging in some ways that suit you on occasion. Those are important. Those are the nuts and bolts of self-care. But right now I am talking about something, frankly, more holy, something deeper and more connected to us as individuals in a church. I am talking about what we wish to touch or come near when we think of a personal spiritual experience, to what it feels like to be under that one person umbrella of personal sanctuary where spirit and the unknown abound. Rumi reminds us, remember, the entrance door to the sanctuary is inside you. Inside you. There are so many tools to connect with center, meditation, walks in beautiful nature, spending quality time looking into the eyes of a newborn, showing up for what you believe is true and must change in our troubled world, rejoicing in a prayer or a poem, connecting with those you love, maybe all of those things, any of those things. Working with a spiritual director, stepping onto holy ground, lighting a candle or a chalice. Tapping a beautiful chime and riding that wave of sound through the end, past the end, and into the deepest silence you know. Staring at the stars, staring at the space between the stars. Covenant groups. Seeing the water of the ocean, a river, or the bay. Deeply seeing it in a way that lets all other distractions drop away. Painting or doing a creative act with all of yourself. Any of those things. All of those and more may help you come close to something extraordinary, something you long to experience. When you feel that feeling, that non-feeling, that moment of deepest rest and utmost exhilaration, that moment of connection with the comforting one, mother, father, Jesus, presence, you feel the connection with love, ground of being, or place of sanctuary. Someone once asked me why we call what we do in this room on Sundays worship. My answer is that we seek to connect with whatever we name that thing, that ineffable thing or non-thing that many of us are confident exists and which we don't touch on a daily basis. That thing that is so much bigger than any of us. That thing that endures across time and place. And one way to sometimes approach that connection is through breathing. Just breathing. In and out. I ask you to take a good seat. Perhaps put your hands near your heart. perhaps put both feet on the floor. I hear the sound of a heart. I hear the sound of breath. Breathing in and out at your own rhythm. Perhaps slowly, perhaps with amazement at your body that does this every minute of every day of your life. Perhaps with intention. In Words by Dana Faulds, it only takes a reminder to breathe, a moment to be still, and just like that, something in you settles, softens, makes space for imperfection. The harsh voice of judgment drops to a whisper, and you remember again that life is not a relay race, that waking up to life is what we were born for. As many times as you forget, catch yourself charging forward. That many times you can make the choice to stop, to breathe, to be, and to walk slowly into the mystery. If I were much wiser and much more patient and had much greater concentration, I could sit in silence in my chair, look out my windows at a green tree and the blue sky, and know that breathing is a gift, that breath is sufficient for the moment, and that breathing air is breathing God, said André Dubos. Hannah Stevenson says, if you stand at the edge of the forest and stare into it, every tree at the edge will blow a little extra oxygen towards you. It has been proven. The leaves admitted it. The pines I have known have been especially candid. One said all breath in this world is roped together, that breathing is the most ancient language. Lynn Unger writes, breathe, said the wind. How can I breathe at a time like this when the air is full of smoke, of burning trees, burning lives? Just breathe, the wind insisted. Easy for you to say if the weight of injustice is not wrapped around your throat, cutting off all air. I need you to breathe. I need you to breathe. Don't tell me to be calm when there are so many reasons to be angry, so much cause for despair. I didn't say to be calm, said the wind. I said to breathe. We are going to need a lot of air to make this change together. And now, slowly, return to yourself. Return to this moment. Let go of what you have experienced, knowing that you can experience it again at any time. Let go. the experience of sanctuary, both sanctuary for all and sanctuary for one, does more than simply refresh or nurture us. Sanctuary also sends us. Sanctuary doesn't just help us heal from our journeys, it also strengthens us for new journeys ahead. In their fullest, they are not escape houses as much as fueling stations. They don't just whisper, come and rest, but also be filled and go. Blessed be. Ashe and Amen.